Good morning. You're tuned into Highlander Newsroom, hosted by myself, Miles Andrews Duvet, editor-in-chief of UC Riverside's Highlander newspaper. And at the roundtable today, we have Evan Ismail, assistant news editor. Sorry, I had to cut you off there. You want to introduce yourself to the people?
I'm Evan Ismail, assistant news editor.
And I just wanted to introduce our guy Adrian here, our first time show for Adrian, first time guest, and our assistant arts entertainment editor. Introduce yourself, man. Say your voice. What do people want to know about you?
I'm Adrian. I'm assistant arts and entertainment editor. I'm a fifth year English major, and yeah, I'm pretty psyched to be here. It's my first time here.
Yeah, man. I'm excited as well. So yeah, the three of us today holding down the fort. A lot to get to. First show coming back from spring break, and yeah, just plenty of information, man. Plenty of information and plenty of news. But let's start with obviously the most pertinent thing, especially in the local sectors, and that is the shooting that happened at San Bernardino's North Park Elementary School. And this was 2 days ago, and 2 days ago from when you're hearing this. And it was a murder-suicide and killed one teacher and injured two students critically, and one of the students unfortunately fatally passed away that evening, and I believe the other one is still in the hospital with injuries. So obviously a tragedy in San Bernardino, and not the first tragedy in San Bernardino. You may want to point to the 2015 shooting that happened, right? But the 2015 mass shooting, but there's been numerous incidents in this city, and the crime rate has only risen since that 2015 incident, and it's really actually a troubling thing. So where were you guys when you heard the news, and what do you think this overall speaks to? The fact that 2015 happened, right, and you're aware of the mass shooting, and crime has only risen in that particular city, and it continues to seems like, at least from people on the ground who are living there, it continues to worsen. So what is your overall thoughts, you know, based on that? You can start with either one of you.
You go, Adrian.
It's like a pretty tragic thing, since like San Bernardino is so close to us, especially it's pretty hard over here. And with the shooting that happened in 2015, it's like how many more bad things can happen there, you know? It's like,
yeah, it continues to get worse, right? And Evan, you want to,
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I think, in my view, that our criminal justice system is starting to worsen. We're starting to decriminalize a lot of things, and I think that, prison overcrowding, we're starting to release more people. I think that plays a big role in it. And I think that that's maybe why that a lot of low-income places like San Bernardino are starting to experience more crime.
Yeah, it's a low-income school. I looked at the statistics, and it's predominantly, I believe, Latino or Hispanic students, 68% there, I believe. So, it continues to get worse. And the media coverage has revealed, as always, very quickly, that the perpetrator and the gunman, he was a husband to the teacher, and he just kind of made his way through the school.
A strange husband, yes.
They had a violent past together. I believe he was abusive, based on reports. But he was very good at putting up the facade that they were very happy together. And he made his way just through the office. The people knew him. He got the, you know, regular visitor tag. He signed his name just as a standard visitor would. But in the media coverage has kind of shown all this. And I'm talking about this because, as we were talking about before the show, right, you consider the other incident that happened more, you know, broadly in the States, and that's the United Airlines incident, in which they overbooked their flight and they literally pulled out a paying passenger from his seat. And he ended up bleeding, right? It wasn't any severe injuries, right? But he was bleeding.
It was pretty traumatized.
It was traumatized, right? And the coverage of that incident has revealed the past of the victim in that case, and saying, you know, basically he wasn't an angel, I guess. I won't go into details about what they revealed, but basically saying he wasn't an angel. So what do you think the responsibility of news outlets are in you know, revealing the past of people like this, whether it's the victim or the perpetrator in the case of San Bernardino? And what are your thoughts on kind of how it's been handled in these situations?
I think the media is really good at, I mean, of course it depends on the situation, but I think the media is very good at dragging people's reputations through the mud. Even though, that happens all the time. I'm not trying to, you know, qualify what the victim did or what, you know, what anybody that we've been talking about did. But I think that the media, you know, they want to boost their ratings. They want to make more money. And I think that a lot of that has to do with, you know, coming up with the most sensationalized, most insane story that they can think of. And if that means dragging somebody's name through the dirt, like the United Airlines passenger, then I think that they would do that.
Yeah, and I don't even think, like, in the case of the United Airlines passenger, like, their past history doesn't... It's not relevant to that story that happened to him.
It's not, yeah.
So...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that his past made him, you know... made the airline overbook their flight. Like, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And I think that, you know, like I said, the media and what we looked at in our editorial, the media just has a really good way of dragging people through the mud in order to make a dime. And I think that it doesn't matter if it's the facts or if it's the truth. I mean, in which case it could be the truth, but for the passenger, I don't know. But, you know, I think it just depends on, you know, what will get us more viewers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing's sacred anymore is the thing, right? And I think it's very, you know, what's the purpose of, what does it mean to us? What does it mean to that victim? What about the victim's family, you know, to have his past revealed and done so in a way to kind of, you know, I guess, limit or mitigate the backlash towards United? I think this is a clear example of the corporate influence over media publications as well, right? I mean, oftentimes, you know, major corporate companies, such as United, right, such as BP, you know, with the oil spill way back. I mean, even though they didn't successfully try to, you know, limit the damage done through the media. In this realm, I think we're seeing something very similar. I mean, it may sound conspiratory, but I'm not saying necessarily there's coercion there, but I think there is a tendency for outlets to, maybe in trying to get the full picture, gives leniency to such corporations that often, you know, can give them advertising money, you know what I mean, things of that nature, and you don't want to damage those ties, and it's troubling, right? I mean, again, nothing's sacred, and it's all about the capitalistic nature of it and making the money, right? And I think that's what's most troubling about this, because these are actual lives and actual people's, you know, I guess, minds affected in the case of United Airlines. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think that you know, that's a great point, because, you know, I think that the media, you know, definitely plays a really good part. I mean, it has a powerful role. You can either tell the truth or you can tell a lie. And I think the media has done a really good job, as we've seen in the past election and just even recently. The media just seems to just be getting more and more just outlandish, and really just, you know, whoever is the first to report a story, you know, everybody has to be first, because, you know, that's, of course, where the most money is. They want to be the first one to break a story, and it doesn't really matter whether it may be true or not. We'll just, you know, figure it out later. And I think that that's also a really big problem, because, you know, they're sacrificing the truth for a profit. And I think that that sets a really dangerous precedent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you being a news reporter, right, for the Islander, I mean, it's, like, you haven't had a situation as, you know, major as this in terms of coverage. But, you know, how do you kind of handle situations that are kind of more sensitive in that nature? Like, how would you approach something like that in your case?
Like United Airlines?
Let's say that. Yeah, let's put you hypothetically in that situation.
I would say that I would want to report what actually pertains to the story. I don't really think that his past has anything to do with him being dragged off an airplane. So in that case, I mean, I think that, you know, you definitely have to take a look and say, well, what pertains to the story? And of course, that's subjective. I mean, that just depends on everybody. I mean, I guess everybody has a different view of what pertains to a certain story. But for me, personally, I don't really think that the guy's life, or excuse me, his past life, has really anything to do with the situation at hand. And in that case, I personally would try to exclude that. I know that maybe sounds wrong, like bad, and especially in light of what I just said, but and what I've been saying. But I think the really there's a line between what's pertinent and then what's just a quest for, you know, what's just clickbait. And I think that that in that case is clickbait. Everybody wants to know what, how scandalous he is, you know.
Mm-hmm. What about in the case of the shooter? Because I've read that the shooter has prior arrest prior to like the killing of his wife. So how would you put that?
I think that's a good question. I think that in that case it does pertain to what happened, because you know that goes to his motive. So why did he shoot his ex-wife or his estranged wife?
Yeah.
Why did he shoot her? It's because, you know, obviously there was definitely such a horrible breakdown that that's just how it transpired, which is heartbreaking and it's terrible. And I think that goes to his motive, and I think that that's worth mentioning and worth reporting on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I am hesitant to call it a double standard, but somewhat it is, and I'm not saying it as a critique, but I think it's a fair double standard to have. Yeah. In that, like, the you know, the victim versus the perpetrator, right? I mean, you have to put these clues together to figure out, okay, what was the motive, right? And in that case, you know.
Right, and like I said, I think there is a line that, mm-hmm. and I think that
there is, yeah.
It's sometimes easier to cross than others, and right. I think that, you know, when you do cross that line, I think that it does set a dangerous precedent if you cross it over and over again, and I think that that's what we've seen. We've just seen the media constantly crossing that line of not reporting things that are really pertinent to the situation,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a huge problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about, I guess, the role of the media now, right? Because it seems like as much as we continue to, I guess, assume that, you know, newspapers and the written word in terms of journalism is not a very important thing in today's media age, at least in recent years, it seems like it's at least maybe spiked, or not spiked, but there has been a spike, I guess, in terms of the role it's played, just in influencing culture, influencing political discourse. And do you think, is that accurate? I mean, it's we talked about in our editorial a bit, where we talked about the situation between the Wall Street Journal and YouTuber PewDiePie, but in a broader sense, it's kind of an analytical perspective, like the role of media and journalism in general right now. So what do you guys kind of see it as right now?
I'll let you go, Adrian.
I think it's spiked really big in the last year or so. And I would actually put it to President Donald Trump, because he has said about the media being fake news, right? And I think people have started to catch on that. And I haven't really seen it, the media being so under fire like it has this past year. And with the whole election being a really big circus, it's like the media just has been all over the place.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. The mainstream media was very, very, very unfair to Donald Trump. Yeah. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, him and I share a similar ideological perspective. But I'm saying that because the media was obviously unfair. You know, it would grant Hillary a pass on things that she did while just completely ridiculing Donald Trump for hours on end. You know, just cable news loves that kind of stuff. So I think that the media has definitely played a huge role in influencing political discourse, and not even political discourse, just culture in general, how we're supposed to think about things, you know. And that's always been the case, but I think that it's becoming more obvious now.
Yeah,
it definitely is. Yeah, and I mean, for better or worse, at least it's put, I think, media and news outlets on their toes a bit more, and trying to report the facts. I think we've definitely seen a jump in quality reporting, like, just based on, you know, publications I've read. I've read consistently. I've seen a jump in just more investigative things and more thoroughly investigated pieces, and a lot of very unique angles that these publications are taking in regards to not only the administration, the presidential administration, but in all other facets. And I mean, for someone who wants to be a journalist, it's a positive thing, you know, to see that. But it is still like question. Like, I think print undeniably is being overtaken by online, right? Like, that's still happening. But nevertheless, I think the role that journalism plays in the broader culture is continuing to expand, actually, and that's a great thing, right?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Yeah. But I, you know, with that expansion comes also, you know, a greater responsibility, and I think that that really needs to be kept in mind when it comes to reporting.
Yeah. And but the other thing with that is also the expansion of just what the media age is now, is that there's so many other outlets. There's so many outlets reporting all on the same thing. Everyone wants to report on different things, which is why we sometimes may get angles like what we just discussed in regards to the victim's, you know, background. And also it leads to a lot of poor reporting in the same way, right? Or poor articles. And I don't want to necessarily... I'm not necessarily critiquing anyone who reads this publication, but stuff like BuzzFeed, right? That is very, I don't know, more like mindless reading in a way. Like things like that that don't really contribute to much other than vanity, which are good for fun.
I mean, you know, it's fun to take the
stuff
quizzes.
Like that.
I take the quizzes. But
right,
I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't read their news and take it with a grain of salt.
But see, some people do, right? And it's seen as an authority. Like, and these things are seen as an authority. So people are just getting varying sides of stories and varying, you know, perspectives that are not always the fullest perspective. And there's, I guess, a lot of holes for people to run into that they feel safe in the media age, right? You don't necessarily have to open your mind up to dissent because of that expansion, if you follow.
Yeah, well, everything caters to a niche now.
Everything,
so,
yeah.
Sure. So everything. I mean, there's channels for everything. I mean, anything you can think of, somebody has a channel for it. And, I mean, you see that on DirecTV. I mean, like, how many channels are on DirecTV? Like, 800? So it's, or even more than that?
More than that,
right? I think 800 is probably lowballing it, but... You know, that's the thing, is that, you know, everything caters to everything now. So, you know, you could just crawl into that little niche that somebody has for you, and you don't have to face anything other than that. And I think that that's also really dangerous, because I remember interviewing with a professor, and he echoed the same comment about media accountability. And you know, he said that everything caters to a niche. And now, you know, it becomes dangerous when you only listen to that one niche. So... when you don't open yourself up to outside perspectives, that's when it really becomes a problem, and that's really when the division starts, and it becomes worse.
And I think we've seen that exemplified in a way, right? But, I mean, we can touch on maybe, I guess, a lighter note, things going on locally on campus. On the front page, two things regarding ASUCR. One, the annual ASUCR ASUCR debates for the elections. A recap of the director as well as senator debates that happened just last week. And today, actually, we have to look forward to the ASUCR presidential and executive cabinet debates. It will be happening from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. In the Hub, at Hub Lower Plaza, to be clear. And, yeah, so you moderated, remind me which one you moderated last week.
I moderated the Senate debates.
The Senate debates, right. Mm-hmm. And I'll be moderating the presidential, and you'll be moderating the executive cabinet today.
Yes. Yeah,
right. Okay. So there's a lot of things going on with this debate. One, and I guess I should have clarified that with the context of the other subject we're going to talk about in regards to ACCR, but one, the formerly known informally your side, which is no longer a party, at least for this election, because of a judicial ruling which disbanded it, most if not all of those candidates are boycotting the debates. So it was a pretty empty, like, I think it was like 9 to 10 senators up there when you were hosting it. But overall, I mean, what do you think these elections will turn out to be?
In regards to boycotting the debate, mm-hmm. I'm trying to remain as unbiased as possible, because I am in kind of a strange position,
right?
being, you know, affiliated with ASCCR and with the Highlander and moderating the debate. So I am mm-hmm. kind of in a tough situation. But I will say this. If you are boycotting the debate because somebody disbanded your party and you're upset about that, that is, in my opinion, that's selfish. And I think that that just goes to show how much you really care about the position and how much you want to represent the students is by not showing up to the debate. Okay, because this is where the students come to hear what you have to say and hear what you can do for them. And I think that boycotting the debate because you're a little angry at the system is just, I don't think that's fair to the students, and I don't really think that's what you're there to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and to be clear, your association with them is on the elections committee, yes. Right. Yeah, it's definitely interesting, and there's been a lot. I mean, when I was laughing at the beginning of the show when I said, like, first week back, we had a lot going on, because Monday morning of week one, I wake up to an email from now president, formerly on leave last quarter, but now president once again, Shafi Karim, and his email basically issuing the executive order that he wants to extend the elections timeline just by 2 weeks. That didn't happen. If that were in effect, then the debates that happened last week would have been pushed back. They wouldn't have happened yet. They'd be pushed back into week three. But yeah, he issued that ruling because he wanted to correct some of the... it wasn't really clear, but I think basically it was in regards to the judicial ruling that I just mentioned, and he wanted to kind of correct the practices of that. And I think based on some sources within ASCCR trying to get back the Your Side party to be, you know, banded together once again, on Wednesday of that week, of week one, Judicial Council, they issued a majority opinion and a ruling, basically ruling that executive order illegitimate and not a urgent need, basically, which is what usually qualifies a president's executive order. And so, yeah, elections are happening as they are. However, man, I can talk about ACCR forever.
Okay, there's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot, yeah. However, the presidential candidate of formerly Your Side for this year, Kevin Sain, has issued a lawsuit, filed a lawsuit not only to the association, ASCCR as a whole, but also a lawsuit, and this is all independently, by the way, against Marcy Kuo, the elections director. Basically, his gripe, from my understanding, is that the disbanding of his party and his slate was done without any consideration of the other side and only the consideration of the people who brought, the petitioners who brought forth the case to judicial, and there's no due process. So that's where we are. I don't even know if I have a question after that. I don't know if I have a question. I'm just kind of clarifying for people listening. But I hope we can have a fair election to whatever extent we can, right?
I hope so.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, and I mean, if anything, you can vote for the Highlander referendum, right? The Highlander revitalization.
Please vote for that.
Yeah, the Highlander newspaper revitalization is something I'll talk about a bit more at the end of the show, but that will also be on the ballot along with the other student representatives and, I believe, a GSF referendum.
Yeah, and then there's a constitutional amendment which mm-hmm. boosts the cumulative GPA of student representatives to a 2.5.
Right, from 2.0 formerly. And yes. So, yes. Nice. But okay, yeah. Is that enough ASCCR for today?
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Okay. Let's talk about a topic that Adrian actually put on our list of discussion topics for today. You wrote the article on Iron Fist, the Netflix series.
Yeah,
correct?
I did.
You didn't per se write this article, but there was an article within our paper about Ghost in the Shell and overall just kind of the whitewashing of such, right, of films of that ilk. Right, within Hollywood, speaking to a broader context. So, start with kind of Iron Fist, your thoughts on it. If I recall, you did enjoy it for the most part, or it was okay?
It's like, okay.
You gave it a 6, right?
I gave it a 5.5 out of 10.
Okay.
So
it's arbitrary numbers, but yeah, 5.5.
But, so. The Iron Fist is like the fourth Marvel Netflix show, and it's all leading up to a team-up show with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, and The Defenders. And out of all the shows, Iron Fist has garnered the most, I'd say, controversy amongst claims of whitewashing against its protagonist. The protagonist is Danny Rand, and He's a white, rich, billionaire, kind of playboy, I guess. And it's, there's, the whitewashing claims are because he comes from a fictionalized setting in Asia called Kunlun, and that's where he learned martial arts. And with that, there's like, there's claims if he should have been Asian, or is it all right if he's just like how he is, or if it can be, the story could be more differently if he was Asian.
Wait, so people are mad because he's white and he learned karate, or excuse me, martial arts in Asia?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what I've...
Or is that too simple?
No, I think that's the general consensus. Mm-hmm. It's weird because the character of Iron Fist, that's how he was back then in the comics, if I get it right. Like, since, like, the 70s, I believe. Mm-hmm. But even then, there was quite a big bit of backlash in the 70s, too. And so people wondered if maybe for the modern setting they could, like, change him to maybe, like, an Asian character instead of being white. So,
what do you think about that, Miles?
I think I haven't seen it, but I think it's definitely... there's definitely... I think, to a broader sense, the whitewashing in Hollywood is kind of undeniable. I actually just had a class today in which we talked about this. And given that I haven't seen this film, I can't speak too authoritatively on it. But based on people I've talked to, including the review including the other people within A&E, like, it seems like this is somewhat of a legitimate gripe. Obviously, it's up to interpretation, but I think, like, there's overall, like, I don't know, to me it's like whitewashing in Hollywood is like a thing. It is what it is, right? And this is just another example of many to me. That's just kind of how I take it.
Recently there's been like so many whitewashing claims in Hollywood. So there's this with Iron Fist, and then of course there's some Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson, and then there was a few weeks ago a trailer dropped for another Netflix series called Death Note,
which
is based on like a popular anime. And for that series, they relocated it to Seattle, and again, it was like a white character and mm-hmm. all angsty and stuff.
Yeah.
Wait. So, Ghost in the Shell. Can you fill me in on that? Wait, like, what's the thing with Scarlett Johansson? I guess there's like, I read the article in Features this week about. Or excuse me, no.
A&E.
Yeah. About Ghost in the Shell and Scarlett Johansson. So why are people angry with Scarlett Johansson?
I guess it's because Ghost in the Shell is this really popular anime film, and it's pretty influential. I struggle with those claims because the character that she plays is an android, and in the original film, she doesn't look too Asian, I guess. She doesn't have too many Asian features. And she's an android as well. She's not, like, human. So, I don't know.
That's interesting. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they
care? I don't know, but it's really been a hot topic lately. And I don't know if it will be resolved anytime soon, but yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, I would love to have this discussion more, but we're running out of time, and I do want to get to you guys' breaks. I mean, well, coming off a break, how are you guys adjusting? We'll just kind of, this will be our last words, supplement for last words. You have a couple minutes, so Evan, how are you readjusting? How was your break overall? Yeah.
My break was great. It was really restful. I saw my grandparents. That was really fun. This week is a lot less busy than last week. I was going crazy last week. Good old week one. It's only week two, and I almost wish I was on summer break, which is not good. But I'm doing pretty good. What about you, Adrian?
Spring break was it was pretty nice. I just spent it with family. But this quarter, I'm not really going back to classes because like. I'm already done with my classes. This is my last year, and I passed all my classes with, like, flying colors. So, nice. That's awesome.
going out with a bang.
Yeah, dude.
That's great, man. Yeah. Yeah, my break was cool. But you know it's cooler? The Highlander newspaper revitalization referendum.
That is correct.
Yeah. And I mean, we have a few seconds to talk about it, so I will do so. Basically, we're requesting $2, an additional $2 on our regular, currently $2 quarterly fee. And the reason being is that we simply, you know, for lack of a better word, we need it to survive and to sustain the existence of the paper entirely, given our current operations that, again, as we talked about earlier, just kind of the decline of print media and a growing media landscape, the maintenance of a newspaper that's reliant upon, you know, print ads and only student fees, because we're entirely student run and independent, it becomes difficult, you know, maintaining at the current costs and current budget. So an increase in student fees for $2 is, you know, is essentially going to save the existence of the paper for at least the rest of the decade, if not longer, if things continue to project as they are. But a no vote on that and a continuation of our current operations could cease the existence of the paper within the next 2 years, if not sooner. So we are in a critical time right now. And given that the paper is the only form of journalism on UC Riverside's campus, there is no journalism program here. Students interested in the field have, you know, used the Highlander continually over the years, over the 63 years it's been in existence, as that outlet. And we want that to continue to be the case. I mean, I know so many students have come by who are like bio majors and stuff, and then like completely shifted their kind of trajectory because they just got involved with the paper and they really like journalism. They really like photography, whatever, you know, videography. They really like that stuff. And it just, you know, it opens your perspective for that. And that's kind of what college is for. And, you know, we are the journalism program on campus, I guess, you know, acting, and we want that to continue. Right. So, yeah, I'll just say that. Anything you guys want to add?
Well, I think it's really important to have a independent voice on campus. You know, we're not really tied to, you know, a super big entity and just, you know, telling everybody what, you know, somebody wants us to tell any, you know, people. But so I think it's really important to have that voice and have that resource. And I think it's really good for students who want to go into the journalism profession to have that kind of experience.
Yeah, man. But yeah, and you guys, you know, you've experienced it, you've enjoyed it here, right? Oh, yeah. So it's all good.
It's awesome.
But yeah, so April 17th, that's a Monday, through Friday the 21st, if I'm correct,
yes,
right, Evan?
Yes, that's Friday.
That is the voting week, so it's coming up next week, and there will be 6 different polling sites. You can check us out on our Facebook page. We'll be updating you as well as in the paper. And we also have a Facebook event up on our Highlander newspaper Facebook page. So if you join that, it's also you saying you'll vote yes, and we'll also be updating information in that page as well. So again, this has been another edition of Highland Newsroom. I'm Miles Anders-Dubay, editor-in-chief of the Highland Newspaper. We had Evan and Adrian alongside me. And, yeah, appreciate you guys tuning in. Listen in next week.